105 Drive with Julian Clover. Cambridge
105. Jem, thanks very much for joining us. We've just heard Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone, and we'll talk a bit about that in a moment or two. But the Institute of Continuing Education, tell me a little bit about the organisation.
Yes, it's an institute within the University of Cambridge, and it was set up nearly 150 years ago. Its remit is to take university education out to the wider world. And also latterly, it has brought people into its own centre. That is Madingley Hall in Madingley, just outside Cambridge, where we put on a lot of our courses, including the course on Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen.
And it's a fairly short course. It's one day for each, I think, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. We often run weekend courses, and there are other much longer courses now, including a Master's in Creative Writing, which is actually a two-year part-time course. So we run a wide range and draw on a very significant diversity of intake.
So Like a Rolling Stone, normally when us presenters need a two-minute song to get us to the news without going over it by too much, we reach for the 1960s, but you definitely can't do that with Like a Rolling Stone.
No, you can't. And Dylan was at the forefront of a movement which allowed people really to write substantial, both in terms of the time span and also meaningful songs in a way that hadn't been easily possible before. I'm not saying there were no long songs before Dylan began to write them, but certainly he made the way easier for others, including, of course, Leonard Cohen, who started to record quite a bit later than Dylan.
Mm. But Dylan wasn't clearly aiming for the top 40 singles market, was he, with his work? It was very much considered.
No, he wasn't aiming for that. And it's interesting that even now, although he's considered such an eminent figure, he isn't really hugely successful in terms of the pop charts, as we might have called them in those days. I think it's a slower burn with Dylan, that people are drawn to him and have been drawn to him over the years. He's still extremely popular, but not in quite those ways, I think. That he doesn't lend himself to that kind of exposure.
And it's interesting because artists can straddle both. I happened to see the Carol King musical in London last weekend, which, of course, I'm sure you'll be familiar with, told the story of how she wrote hits for artists like the Drifters and the Monkees, and then, of course, put that to one side and went off and arguably went down a Dylan-esque album route in the early 1970s with Tapestry.
Yes. Yes, that's right. I think if I talk about Dylan as opening the doors, he's certainly not the only one to be leaning on them. The idea that you could create serious, and this is a relevant issue, the idea that you could create serious literature in popular song was important. I think the idea also, and you've raised it, of straddling a divide, or perhaps not even straddling, but recognizing that you can go in two directions simultaneously, that you can draw in this wider public in quite large numbers and at the same time have something significant to say. This was very much the kind of trail that Dylan was blazing.
And you brought up the literature word there. Of course, Dylan controversially awarded the Nobel Literary Prize last year. Well, where do you stand on that?
Well, my view is that he is an eminent figure who uses words to convey what he wants to convey. Words alongside music. I'm certainly not a musician myself, and I felt always that that was a problem when I talked about Dylan. In this particular course, I've got a musicologist friend coming in to talk about that side of things as well. So we'll be covering both of those bases. My view is that Dylan did use words. He used them very effectively. He is a literary figure, and I don't think it should have been controversial. Interestingly, though, I think had they chosen Leonard Cohen, as they easily could have done, he was still alive, although he died the following month. Had they chosen Leonard Cohen, it would have been more easy perhaps, because for them to defend that choice.
Because Cohen officially started as a poet before moving down the musical route afterwards.
Correct, yes, and poet and novelist. Mm. He was a published poet, and an eminently published poet is the interesting thing, that he was being widely tipped as Canada's next great poet. And in a certain sense, he was.
Mm. And the pair of them would have been around in, clearly, in the 1960s, which was a time of so many shifts in all sorts of things in society and the world at large. Do you think their work benefited from that? Or would they have been just as thoughtful on any decade?
It's difficult to tell because it's hypothetical, but I think that they did benefit hugely from being part of a movement, if you can put it that way. It's not a single movement, of course. It's a multiplicity of different movements. But society is in a state of upheaval, and if you think about Dylan's The Times They Are Changing, mm. It's a song about radical change, not just a few things being shifted. Dylan is really arguing in that song, if it is indeed an argument, rather than it's a very celebratory song by Dylan's standards, but he's saying there is a new thing coming this way, and you either have to embrace it or get out of the way if you can't lend a hand, he says.
Do you think that they're being from the 1960s, do you think that's when they peaked, both Cohen and Dylan, as writers? Because that your course is pretty much on the 1960s, and not, well, both of them were, you know, reasonably prolific and both in the 70s, into the 80s and well beyond.
Yes, that's right. I certainly think that in the case of Dylan, the greatest songs come from the 1960s, and I'm prepared to be argued with on that point. And I think I would also want to make an exception there for the 1975 album Blood on the Tracks, which I think is an absolutely fantastic album too. There have been great songs since, in Dylan's case, but never quite the great albums of the middle part of the 1960s. In Cohen's case, I think there would be a stronger argument to be made for him continuing as an artist. But of course, it's all founded on what happens in the 1960s. And I think it's easier to discuss what their music was in the 60s and became subsequently if one focuses on those beginnings.
So it's easier to relate to events at the time, whereas in the 70s, you're saying it got the writing was more general, by which I mean sort of general to them rather than to society.
I think I'm saying more that if you want to understand a building, look at its foundations,
right.
That the foundations define that building. And in both cases, I think what was going on in the 1960s was absolutely crucial in a way that, let us say, what was going on in the 1980s or the 1990s wasn't essential to what they were, what in fact they had already become.
And you mentioned a classic Dylan album there. What would you say would be a classic album from Cohen that everybody should have in their collection?
I think the two first albums, really, Songs of Leonard Cohen and Songs from a Room, I think these are absolutely brilliant albums. Subtle in ways that perhaps the third album, Songs of Love and Hate, was not. And I don't mean by that suggest that he had lost it by 1971, only that maybe those great songs were already there in a sense in Cohen, you know, just as some people have one novel in them but they can't get the second one out. I'm not quite saying that about Cohen either, because I think he produced some absolutely wonderful songs subsequently, but probably those early songs had been brewing for quite a long time. In fact, we know they had.
And you got one day on Dylan, one day on Cohen. How about going forward? Are there any other similar courses up and coming that people might be interested in?
Well, one of the things I should say is that we're already oversubscribed for the two courses, in fact. We're getting on for oversubscription in a repeat that we're going to be running. So I suppose on one level you could suggest that we could run this for a third occasion, and it may very well be that we do. But even if we don't, I think we could move further forward in history. Once we've laid down this foundation, we could think of what happened to those two artists in the 1970s, the 80s, the 90s, and as you suggest, beyond. We could also think about other artists, although I think few of them lend themselves to quite the kinds of literary analysis that I'm involved in. I should perhaps have explained early on that I've been running poetry courses for the Institute for over 30 years now. And one of the things that I'm hoping to do is to, by focusing on these popular figures, to suggest that actually poetry still runs through our lives, and to increase the uptake for courses like the course I should be running on Ted Hughes fairly shortly in February. That's the kind of thing that I think people don't always know about, and sometimes people know that they love popular song without realizing that popular song is the contemporary form of poetry for many people.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit like politics, really. People don't say they're interested until all of a sudden there's plans to close off a few roads around the city, then all of a sudden, right, yeah. All of a sudden they get interested. One thing intriguing me though, on your poetry courses, will you then sort of mention and reference the likes of Dylan and Cohen on those?
I have done, but I've never run a sustained course for precisely the reason I touched on earlier, that I felt uneasy about doing that without talking about the music at the same time. And yet, in terms of my own personal history, Dylan and Cohen must be among the most significant poets in my life. Mm. They had a huge impact on me as I was growing up.
I could carry on talking probably for the rest of the programme, but we have to stop. So Jim Poster, thanks very much for coming and speaking to us.
A pleasure.